This week on RSBNB Update, the Nodon Front brings Karapak, the boss for everyone and one of the best in RuneScape. Magic has a blast with some sweet upgrades that level the playing field, but who has noticed? We share and have a glimpse into the future of Magic on RuneScape. This is RSBNB Update, episode 840, recorded Thursday, July 29th, 2021. Karapak. The boss for all. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week has been a week in terms of RuneScape PVM things that I never thought I'd see myself getting involved in. And, of course, we're talking about the release of the first front of the Elder God Wars dungeon, the Nodon Front. Tanis wanted to be here for this episode, but he appears to be coming down with some kind of throat impasse, and he's barely able to talk at this time. So he's not here, but nonetheless, joining me on this episode, going from top to bottom on my alphabetical list, is David. Welcome aboard.
Hey, how's it going? I like the word impasse, by the way.
Yeah, it's an impasse preventing him from speaking. Thaxi is also here, who you might remember from our Emerald Bolt special. Welcome back.
Hey again.
And of course, Zant, one of our longtime friends here at the podcast. And I wanted to have you on this show because I know you're just returning from, you know, getting back into PVM. But I also wanted to hear what you have to say about the environment of this place. So we're going to just have a huge, nice discussion on everything Karapak related this week. Next week, we will be focusing on the Slayer mechanics and anything else that we might be able to find inside the Nodon Front, including potential very rare lore books of people, as people have said, all searching around for that. But nonetheless, hopefully you guys enjoy this fun little episode that we're about to put together, and I think we're going to have some wonderful discussions here about this boss, because everybody in this podcast so far has managed to kill this thing, at least on normal mode. And that's saying a lot for me. I don't know what your abilities are, Zant. What was your go-to PVM back in the day?
So, back in, like, 2010 era, around then, I used to do, like, solo necks before EOC came out, so pretty high tier. But then I'd kind of just quit for a while when I went off to college right after EOC came out, and I just never really got back into it until recently.
All right. And of course, you guys all know what David does.
Did you do the melee blood phase method or what? How did you
do it at one point? Spectrum? I do remember that. I think I did mostly, I don't remember. I think I did mostly range, but I remember there was a time when you could, like, stand in a specific spot on the ice phase and just completely ignore the ice prison. I can't remember what style that was with, though. It's too long ago.
Of course, we're talking about one God Wars dungeon here, and this goes all the way back to God Wars 1 Nex. And I think this discussion on Nex is so important because everything that we've been involved in this week has built up from that, from God Wars 1 to God Wars 2 to the Elder God Wars dungeon. And overall, I have to say, going into this, that I was surprised that I actually wound up enjoying this thing. But more on that as we get through. What we're going to do here is we're going to talk a little bit about normal mode, then hard mode, and then go into the rewards, which, of course, everybody wants to hear about. But if you want to follow along, you can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com or join our Discord as well, rsbnb.com/Discord. Okay, so Zant, you've returned from this, and obviously you don't do PVM that often these days, right?
I mean, I do Reapers every now and then.
Okay.
And sometimes I do a Raxor.
All right. Were you surprised at how easy it was to get into this?
Actually, yeah, and especially after my experience with Raksha, which I still haven't gotten a kill at yet. I killed this thing in my first attempt, so that was just, I was like mouth wide open after that.
All right.
I didn't expect it. I thought it was going to be pretty tough.
And I assume David and Thax, you guys got it on your first attempt as well, right?
Not hard mode.
Okay,
I didn't get my hard mode kill.
Normal mode, right? Normal?
Yeah, normal mode too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Normal mode first try. Yes.
All right. How about you, Thaxi?
Yeah, absolutely. Sent one the morning before I got started on Monday.
Okay, fair. I like what you did there. and of course, I haven't tried hard mode yet. Zant, have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Now, David and Thaxi, I know, David, you've probably got a solo kill hard mode, right?
Yeah. I got a solo on my second try.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't do it without knowing what was happening. I just asked people how to do it. And they just told me how to do it. I didn't get it second try blind.
How are you finding hard mode, Thaxi?
I am very happy in trios. I think I could probably pull off a solo. I'm pretty confident in my ability to use defensives and to stall out things if I need to. But
all right,
yeah, it would be a struggle for me for sure.
All right. And that, in effect, going to sum up what you guys are going to see throughout this entire show, because you can start off with this in, you know, going to kill Karapak in normal mode. And I did it with, of course, my Ascensions. But I think the estimate is that you can pretty much get it done with Tier 80 gear, with even Tier 70 power armor if you're doing truing. That's your thought, right, David?
Yeah, I think tier 80 weapons, tier 70 power armor is totally sufficient to do the boss in normal mode.
All right, where are you two?
And and you could use those emerald bolts that he told you about.
that's what I've been using. Where are you two, Thaxi and Zan, hovering at in terms of the equipment level you guys are using for this?
So I'm using a set of Pernics that's perked out pretty good, and a set of Ascensions that are also perked out pretty decently. Essence of Finality. I've got pretty decent gear, just not the best.
Yeah, and you know, that's really all you need, I think. So,
budget high tier, let's call it that.
Yeah, sure. And this fight is broken up into three phases on normal mode. Karapak will start off with around 200,000 life points and moves on to the next phase when you hit 50,000. And I assume they built this buffer in because there are probably those people out there who could just kill the thing straight up if you were at around 50,000, right? That's the logic in doing that?
Yeah, and I will also look at, I think, a Seradom and Godbow spec I think could do it too. That's it. I also, on the topic of gear that people could use for this, just a quick note that if you have the magic level to use the new magic spell Reanimate Dead, and you're wearing a full set of magic tank armor, which, just as a fun fact, for no apparent reason, the ancient cloak item from Treasure Trails counts as tank armor for magic.
Huh.
It's that and the Third Age Druidic cloak, and nothing else.
Interesting.
The ancient cloak and the Third Age Druidic, yeah. So if you're wearing those and you're wearing even, you know, no shield necessary, but just, you know, five pieces, gloves, boots, you can reduce his damage completely to about 75 to 150 if you're praying against the right style, which makes Karapak normal mode incredibly doable if you just have, I think it's like 92 magic, so it is fairly high requirements in order to cast that spell, but it makes him very, very eminently just... You can just relax and just do the mechanics and and enjoy the boss fight that way.
So you're saying you can basically use that with magic and just make it a whole lot easier on yourself and not worry about the whole power armor
you
bit.
You effectively get like 75% damage reduction on top of your protection prayers. And it makes him, you know, very, very safe as a boss to do. If you're trying to learn and really just want to take it nice and slow, don't have, you know, if you want to just run your tank gear, you have ports, armor, sea singers, or even just like Ganodermic, I think, is tank armor.
Yeah, Ganodermic is the other one. Yeah.
That's a cheap way that you could really just go for it.
You know, I never actually thought of trying it with magic, honestly, and I do have that spell, and I do have all that tank armor you were just mentioning, so maybe I'll give that a go at some point, but I'm actually finding good success with the ranged setup that I've been doing on this.
Your kill speed would go down a lot.
Okay.
I think,
notably,
from,
yeah.
Yeah, going all from right. Emerald Bolt meta to Animate Dead meta is a big loss in DPS.
Yes.
It's 50 to 75% longer kill times for me.
Okay.
I did a couple of them today just to test it out.
Thank
but it's,
you.
Like I say, it's incredibly safe. You can completely ignore all of his mechanics. The first time I did it, I actually just stood underneath the melee slam for a nice 30 seconds, just chilling. It's a great time, even with the increased damage on it.
Good to know. Good to know. And this goes into, of course, the accessibility of the boss that we'll cover. But let's talk about some of its mechanics in particular, starting off with what's called Shatter. And I don't know why they call this Shatter internally, but effectively what it is an attack with the staff. Karapak will say, "I'll tear right through you." The staff goes up, stuns the player, and a rift appears at the opposite side of the arena. And if you stand in the path of whatever's coming out of that rift, you'll take a little bit of damage. I really don't see this attack on normal as that big of an issue, and I'm effectively able to just walk out of the path of it, and I haven't even been freedoming from this one. And given my
it's a shatter in space time, and then like the lightning bolts are shards, like the shards of the shatter.
Okay, makes sense. Mm. That makes sense.
This is an elder artifact attack, Shane.
Yeah.
Devotion also fully reduces the damage from it, so if you don't want to, you don't have to move if you just devotion before he casts it.
Yeah, you sure don't. And that's another thing that I've been experimenting with as well, mainly on the final phase of the fight. But the next attack is one that killed me a lot in this fight when I was doing the first couple runs until I got a kill, and this one's called...
In Shane's defense, when I took Shane, we killed it too fast for him to be able to
I was wondering about that.
He didn't know this attack existed because we killed it too quickly.
And
not his fault.
And to be fair, one thing about this is that as a result of that, I still have this sub-2-minute kill time because of that. When in reality, most of my kills are happening around the 5-minute mark. So
it's okay. You carried that one.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But the jumping slam attack, which is effectively an attack where Karapak will fly up into the air, and then he says, "You will break beneath me." With this, he will fly to wherever you are at in the arena, land on you, and stun you and root you in place, and he'll deal rapid melee damage to you on this one. And since this was, I guess, in my view, one of the more difficult attacks, I'm going to ask how Zant, how you mitigated this on the first run.
So, okay, I kind of have two. So, first of all, I kind of just surged away. There's a timing that if you surge right when he comes down, he just won't hit you at all, and then you'll be decent ways away from him, and you can just attack. I also discovered that if you stay right next to him, like within melee distance, he won't get up and fly around yet again. So if you get a like an enhanced devoted proc, or if your devotion's up and you can mitigate all that damage, it's like a really good chance to actually like get in some hits on him while he's just standing there. So those are just the two ways I've been dealing with it.
That's interesting, because whenever I had the devotion up and he did that attack, it would effectively turn it off.
Yeah, it does that sometimes. I don't know. I feel like I noticed that more towards the end of the fight. Not 100% on that.
It takes a few ticks for him to turn that off, and we definitely get, you know, you get some benefit out of it. Yeah, not the full devotion for sure, though.
Okay, fair enough.
And I've noticed it's just since you're getting so many hits from him, it's pretty likely that it will proc. So if you devotion beforehand and he kind of just knocks it down, oftentimes it kind of just comes back anyways.
Yeah, and
it works good in some instances.
Yeah, but you know, the damage level we're talking about taking from this, if you don't change your prayer type to melee, upwards of what I found, you know, in the teens, like 1700-ish per hit. So it's not a fun attack, and dangerous if you're not watching out for it. And he will fly.
Or swap those prayers.
Yeah, that's something I need to work on. And speaking of that, this boss feels like a good place that I could start practicing some of these mechanics, so to speak, because it's just at that right spot where it's not as easy as God Wars 2, but it's no Araxor, it's no Raksha, if I was to ever go out and try that kind of thing. It's just at that right spot, I find, for me at this point.
I really do agree with that. It's definitely a step up from God Wars 2, but it's not Raksha hard, so I feel like I can definitely kill it quite consistently, but it doesn't just fall over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say even with relatively middling gear at this point, God Wars 2 is way too easy to be a place where you can learn mechanics. Because maybe like 4 years ago or 5 years ago, it was perfect as a stepping stone to harder stuff, but now gear and damage has gotten too good, and God Wars 2 is just no longer challenging for almost anyone, so I think it's perfect.
Anyways, getting back to the jumping slam attack, he will do that attack 3 times before returning to the regular rotation of attacks that he does, and the stun effect can actually be removed from the attack by upgrading your Pontifex Shadow Ring with 1,000 Resonant Shadow Anima of Jazz. And it took a while for me to figure this out, but you actually don't have to be wearing the ring in order to have that upgraded effect.
The other thing to think about with this too is that once you get that upgrade, a lot of the time I have been just not surging and just making sure that I am moving when he is doing his when he's jumping. So that's like a great time if you've got your fleeting boots. You can just channel a rapid fire and not interrupt it. Same thing with Nightmare Gauntlets and Snipe. Or if you're just clicking abilities while you walk, like vaguely manual-ish, just click any ability. You can continue to do damage to him without interrupting it. So I've actually not been surging for a lot of my normal mode kills just to get off a little extra damage, which has been really nice.
And how are you mitigating? No, how are you mitigating that damage? I guess you're just doing the melee prayer swap,
yeah,
right?
I mean, as I'm walking, if you're moving at running speed, you go 2 squares every tick. You only take one of those damage ticks every tick. So at most, you take 1 to 2 hits from him. If you're praying melee, that's a couple thousand total damage. And I found that that's very reasonable to kind of heal through if I don't get an enhanced devoted proc, which is about 30% of the time. You've got to hit twice, so you know half the time it activates. Like the actual damage you take from that has been like something I'm willing to eat through in order to just say, nah, I don't have to worry about the timing. I'm just going to take it. Hard mode, obviously, that does twice as much damage, so you need to be a little careful, but for normal mode, I'm just kind of ignoring it. I'm just walking away.
Yeah, and you and I also talked last night about the animation and the right time to surge if you want to surge. Maybe explain that a bit, because I haven't been able to master that yet.
There's 3 good animation ticks that they built into it. And actually, they depend on what I – so I played around to look last night at what you were talking about. I played around with the visual settings on it. I use a lower visual setting if you don't have your textures on, like, uncompressed and high lighting detail.
Oh.
His talons appear much more yellow. If you turn your lighting detail to low, they appear this nice bright yellow color that's very visible.
Oh, okay.
So the surge timing, the joints in his wings close, which is apparently what they intended us to all to look for, and then nobody has apparently noticed that that's
a
thing.
And you know what the interesting part is? After you and I had that conversation, I actually went and analyzed this thing frame by frame, and that's what I deduced myself as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good to know.
They want you to surge when the wing joint's close. So there's that. But also, I believe it's his left leg goes from slightly in front of him, and it goes back behind him. It fully extends back at that exact same moment. And also his toes, those bright yellow talons on a lower difficulty, which is what I've been using, they curl in. So if you have your camera above, they become invisible. So as soon as you see the talons disappear, that's when I surge. It has been very consistent.
And that's a very quick indicator there.
It's a very clear visual marker for me.
And if you're looking at Karapak straight on, you're obviously not going to see that compared to if you've got him angled towards a more side profile kind of view.
No, it still shows up because they duck underneath. He pulls them in underneath himself, actually.
Okay.
So unless you're directly behind him, unless your camera is, for whatever reason, with him in front of your player model, they do still disappear. It's been very consistent for me.
And if Tanif was here, he'd ask, how the hell is somebody who's using a screen reader or a screen magnifier going to see that?
Look at the toes.
Yeah, but
they're really bright yellow.
I had no idea this was a thing. I just kind of like memorized the timing, and then after I did that, it was fine.
Yeah.
But that's very interesting.
I mean,
yeah,
it's very
just
much
kind of going with the feel of it, so it's good to have an actual cue.
It feels like the same timing as Telos to me, actually, and it feels very similar to the timing for Nexus Siphon. If you just get used to the off timings for those, I want to say it's very similar to what I'm used to for those surges.
Interesting. But,
don't quote me on that,
no,
please.
No, and you know, we always say we're not the PVM guide here. We're talking about the mechanics. We're doing the rundown of the mechanics, and hopefully you guys can gain something from this. And the last special attack, which we also didn't see in that very quick run, was the lightning attack, the lightning strike. What this happens with this one, Karapak will say, witness the power of the staff. And the staff rises, and at the other side of the arena, or at some side of the arena, is a wall of lightning appears. Do we know if there's any rhyme or reason to where it appears?
You guys can correct me on this. I think I'm just over 60 kills, about 20 on hard mode and 40 on normal. And I have never seen it appear at the closest wall to me if I'm within a couple squares of it. It seems to never appear directly on top of you.
It can't appear directly on top of you. They're talking about doing it where that it like always goes diagonal from like making it more consistently predictable. But it won't ever appear. If you're next to a wall, you will never just get insta-killed by the lightning.
The other thing that I haven't seen people talking about is that you do get one additional lightning wave per phase. So on phase one, you get one. On phase two, you get two. And the previous phase's lightning will always go the same way. So your lightning on phase one, if it goes from south to north, in phase two, you'll get a yellow time lightning that goes from south to north and a green new lightning that goes in a different direction. So if you are in your magic tank armor doing a really nice slow kill, and you see your waves in the first two, you know where those are coming from in wave three, so you can be prepared to surge to avoid those, and then you surge the green one. The math, or the tech on this is that if you cross each wall once, you won't get hit by any of them.
Yeah.
You need to cross each wall an odd number of times.
Yeah, and surge helps with getting through it quickly. And it's important to note that it looks like there are gaps in the lightning that you can walk through, just like you would try and do at the QBD, but that is not the case. That doesn't happen. And at the outer edges of the lightning, you'd think that you can just go around it. There are parts of the map where the lightning is invisible. And I've been bit by this, where I got hit by invisible lightning. So,
I think we can talk about this once we finish the mechanics.
Yeah.
But there's some interesting things with when you rejoin an instance if you're in a group with multiple people. And I think we'll address
all
that
right,
later.
Fair enough.
That comes up here too.
Following from this, the lightning attack can also be skipped if you do enough damage. And you realize we're just talking about the first wave or the first phase here, but the attacks used by Karapak are the same on each subsequent wave. They're just more of them on waves two and three, because what's happening is Karapak, of course, is one of his weapons as the needle, which manipulates time. And that's what we were talking about in terms of seeing your lightning attacks from the previous waves. There'll also be echoes of Karapak that appear on the subsequent waves that also do the jumping slam attack, and the echoes of Karapak will also do the shatter attack on each different wave, where it will send the blast of green energy throughout the field that will damage you if you're standing in the way. Then I think the final thing to mention on phase four is that Karapak will become enraged. And at this point, it's an interesting mechanic, because as you do more damage to him, the enrage counter, whatever it's called, I don't remember the exact name for it, that will tick up and he will do more damage through your protection prayers. So that is a good time for that enhanced devoted perk to activate, or for you to just fire off your standard devoted ability.
Every time he auto-attacks you, he gains 15 stacks on average. Sometimes it shows up as 10, sometimes it shows up as 20, but it's 15.
Yeah, my guy does like 4Ks through prayer and hard mode, so it's great.
Or much more.
That doesn't sound fun at all, does it, Zant?
Yeah, I'll pass on that for now.
Each enrage stat gives him 1% additional damage. So every time he autos you in normal mode in that last berserk phase, he does 15% more damage than that on the next attack.
Yay!
Stacking up.
Doesn't Araxi have kind of a similar mechanic where she gets more powerful as it goes on towards the end?
Yes, yeah. She does. There's not as direct of a correlation there. There's right. A few bosses that have that, like Raksha's Shadow Anima Absorption is a similar vein as well.
I want to talk about Time Warp, because we didn't mention that going through this, and this is the first boss to feature a special ability like this, the Time Warp ability. In this case,
Solek had one.
Oh, he did? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
What will happen is you'll get this little button on your screen, and when you click it, you will have the option of effectively creating a temporal copy of your character where your position, your adrenaline level, your ability cooldowns, and most importantly, your health, those are all saved. And after 10 seconds or when you click the button, you will go backwards to that point in time. And I imagine this has a big use on hard mode. I know on easy mode, I use this to reset big abilities like Death Swiftness.
It's the entire key to phase four, especially in solo.
Yeah, because
for sure.
I used it to heal up on that phase four or phase three enrage phase on normal. So that's something that definitely helps with that. And for the first few kills, I didn't actually use this much because I was focusing on everything else that was on the screen. But warp time is, I think, a pretty neat little ability that they baked into this one, because it is, in effect, allowing you to just bring forward more control of the battle.
It lets you use abilities in new and unique ways. You can use the same ability twice in a row. You can use very powerful abilities twice in a row. It's effectively, here's 100% extra adrenaline, and none of your cooldowns matter. Have fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the...
double-click it.
Yeah, don't double-click it, because that won't serve you well. And I think this is one of the ways that the boss is made more accessible in that regard. Anything else before we move on to hard mode? Zant, anything else you want to bring up from the normal mode aspects here?
Not that I can think of.
All right. How about you two?
Do we want to mention the first time they've given us those like loot caskets or loot boxes that you get with the ring?
Let's save all the drops. Yeah, let's save those for later, because I find those rather embarrassing, honestly.
Oh, I really like them. I got another.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like them
too. I think we need. We'll talk about that when we talk about common drops.
When we get.
I do want to mention before we move on from normal mode. I think it's worth just doing a quick like PVM or overview of like where normal mode fits into things.
Before that's a good idea.
Because comparison to other bosses, like what I wanted coming into Elder God Wars was like I was looking for content that was maybe a Rex or maybe Nex kind of level, where we're looking in that like 200 to 400,000 life point range with a handful of mechanics. And I think that they delivered on that. They give us something that's got, you know, an extra third more HP than Araxor. It's got twice as much hit points as Nex, but much fewer mechanics than either of those bosses.
Right.
Which is, again, I think this is like your perfect building point for PVMers who were getting...
There was
kind of a blank space there between those God Wars Dungeon 2 bosses and those standalone one-off... your Nex and your Rex and those kind of things. And I think this is a good... I think that's where this fits in, and you guys can obviously have input on that too. But I think that it fills a very good niche in that zone in terms of being enjoyable content.
Yeah, I think that works. That's entirely it. Because my PVM experience so far has been, okay, let's do a few rounds at God Wars 2, but it's really not that interesting. Okay, it's free death week. Last time we had a free death week, let's go kill Araxor for the first time. I did that.
Yay.
But there was a definite gap in between of the mechanics and stuff, and just in general, feeling my way around the combat system for PVM.
Yeah, it also made me think a lot about God Wars Dungeon 2 challenge mode, because in some ways this feels like what that should have been. So I'm really glad that they did it, because I think it's pretty much perfect. Because there just hasn't been anything for 5 years that was a reasonable gap between like borderline AFK Vindicta and Araxor.
Good mid-tier boss is what we'll call it. I also want to make a comparison, and this is absolutely the lore hound in me coming out. This feels like Nomad to me. You've got the Berserk phase at the end. You've got a mechanic that's don't stand here. You've got some stunning happening while he's throwing big damage at you. Like, I, as a person who really likes Nomad and a lot of the Nomad-style fights, this is somewhere between original Nomad and new hard mode Nomad, and seems to fit very much in that vein of mechanics of a boss, about the same
number
of mechanics.
You're right, it does feel like a quest boss when you put it that way.
I like it. It gave me real big, heavy Nomad vibes, and I'm a big fan. Especially that Berserk phase at the end. So then I was like, oh my god, here we go again! Let's break out the Spirit Rocks and the Scrolls and spam those boys! Take me back to 2011.
That was a good time. All right, Heart Mode adds, of course, the pieces for Staff of Armadil, but we'll get more into how broken the staff was later. But Hard Mode. David, do you want to mainly talk about this in terms of how normal is different, or sorry, how hard is different from normal?
Well, I would say the gap is pretty enormous in terms of difficulty, which is good. I think that's what it should be. I think tier-wise, it's closer to Raksha, maybe slightly harder than Raksha. Maybe more than slightly. I don't know. I think that, obviously, as people
get... Yeah, you're right.
I think once people are at hundreds of KC in solo, though, it'll feel more natural, just like anything else. But yeah, so the first three phases of the fight are the same, except he has more HP, so it's harder to just skip mechanics and solo. In trio, you certainly can. If you have like three rangers with Hydrix bolts, you can skip. You could skip almost every mechanic. But this time, the rift, which shatters, is now attackable, and if you don't kill it, it has 15,000 life points. It'll keep periodically shooting at you. And you get one per person.
Okay.
Sorry, what was that, Shane?
I said, okay, 15,000. That's a lot.
I've been getting hits of about 500, but maybe 500. It's 500 per rift.
Yeah. It's the rift itself has 15,000 life points. So when you kill
Okay.
It doesn't
fair
deal
got
15.
It. Got
yeah.
it. Got
it doesn't
it.
Deal every 15K's to you. That would be
okay. I was gonna say.
I was getting a little concerned there.
500 damage every two or three ticks. It's
that's not too bad then.
Yeah, but it still hurts. Up. It hurts.
Yeah,
especially
for sure.
You definitely do not want to stand it. This is you either want to devotion it, although this is a bit of a waste of a devotion, potentially. But you either want to devotion it or you want to get out of the way. This is not like normal mode where you can tank it and feel good about it. You definitely do not want to sit in this thing. So you got to kill them. They're 15,000 life points. And then there's extra... So there's lightning as before. And then the same jumping mechanic, but
is the damage scaled up for things like the jumping mechanic?
Yeah, the damage for everything seems to be scaled up significantly.
What are we talking?
I don't really know.
Two to three times.
Yeah,
okay.
Two to three times more damage from everything, and then phase four. The
you also said there's a third wall of lightning. in the first three phases.
Yeah.
Still one wall per phase.
One wall per phase. Okay. Yeah. I put that in kind of early. Okay. So, and then phase four is where it's like super different. So we've got the enraged thing, but it goes on for a much longer time. So the enrage can get extremely high, and Carapat creates three echoes of himself and the player. And you could, it's really cool. You could
with
switch
the needle,
between,
of course.
Right. We really see the needle in action, and you could switch between your clones. So basically your clones are fighting against Carapac, and it takes about 10 or so hits, I would say, before he kills your clone. And yes. You don't want your clones to die, because that will cause him to start doing even more damage.
Rage works very differently here.
Yeah. And so you want to make sure that you're both doing a lot of damage, and also make sure that you're not letting your clones just get wrecked, because they likely will die before you can kill all three of his echoes. And so this is where the time warp mechanic is really cool. So in solos, the kind of safest way to do it seems to be to position yourself between two of the echoes and use an ulti and then time warp and use that to quickly kill one of the echoes. And then you switch to, you know, your other echo and use the time warp to extend your devotion to 20 seconds. And that kind of allows you to maximize damage and then, you know, be safer as the enrage starts getting ridiculously high and he starts hitting super hard.
Now, I imagine if you were taking a trio, you'd assign one person to each of the echoes, right?
You do. I'll talk a little bit more about mechanics. I've been doing these nice and slow. My trios are very relaxed. So first of all, just for like context-wise, the needle goes haywire after he uses it three times. In normal mode, he only does two rewinds. In hard mode, he tries to do a third, and the needle says, no, which is why it's got all that stuff on it. It's kind of unhappy right now. It's a little broken. And so the needle creates four separate timelines, or three separate timelines, all of which are protecting Carapac. And there's in each of these timelines, there's a version of every player in the instance attacking the boss. Each player can only see their own echoes. So effectively, you see three versions of Carapac, plus the real one, plus three versions of yourself, plus the real you at the start of
this. I'd imagine that gets quite crowded.
It's really crazy. You can't see the other players, thank God. There's not 12 players in this arena. Holy moly.
Oh my gosh.
But the Carapacs will attack, each Carapac will attack the players. So we'll, in solo, which is the easiest way to explain this, there's just three players and three Carapacs plus the real you. You can click any of the versions of yourself that you are not currently in to take control of that time loop. If you're not in the time loop with the correct Carapac, you do massively reduced damage. Your hit cap is about 500.
Now, how do you know which Carapac is correct?
They're directly adjacent. They'll be attacking the echo that you're on. Like there's a south Carapac and a west Carapac and a north Carapac. And there's a southwest and north player that's kind of nearby them.
Right.
Like it's pretty evident that they're attacking each other. If the Carapac is doing damage to the player. The player version is not doing damage back, which is a problem. Anytime any of those echoes dies of the player, the Carapac, all of the Carapacs gain 25 stacks of fury. So they all do 25% more damage. Anytime any of the Carapac echoes die, all of the Carapacs gain 50 stacks. And as soon as the first one of those echoes is killed, the main Carapac will also start gaining those 15 stacks every attack. So the way to do this safely in a trio is that you have each person take over their echoes. And then in theory, right, you've got two echoes that the person who is in that timeline can't see from the other two players in the arena. And their goal is to kill Carapac before he can kill the echoes of the other players. Because if those echoes die, if you get 12 echoes that die, or if you know you're assuming one player's in each of them, you get like 8 echoes that die. You get 200 stacks before you run the main boss, which is a problem.
I'd imagine that's not workable.
Shield camping. No, you shield camp. You actually can with a lot of barricade, you can survive that. That's honestly how a lot of my trios have ended.
Okay.
And part of that too is that there's some issues with when you're re-entering the boss fight, and I think we can talk about that when we finish Rock Mode. But the quick, like the way you do this in a solo, let's say, kind of meta-ish, is that you can, when you take the place of the echoes of the player, you gain the health that that has. So if it takes 10 hits for that care pack to kill that echo, you can enter that echo when it's on 1,000 life points. You got to be really careful you don't get one shot, but then you can eat a ton and then just go to the next echo and do it, and you'll re-heal them all.
Okay. And if you die while you're controlling,
you just trade places.
And if you die while you're controlling an echo, that is a death for you, right?
It's just a death.
Okay.
If you die, you die. Yeah.
Right, fair enough.
But if any of your echoes die that you're not inhabiting, it's just 25 stacks onto Carapac that you don't want to go with if you don't have to. So that's like complicated, but in a nutshell,
and
you can eat to heal your echoes.
It's even hard to realize if you watch this a few times. So for people who are listening to this, you know, if you're wanting to do this, you're going to probably want to go with a few people who have done this before. But overall, as you said, phase four is where things start to get a little bit hairy for this.
I've had a couple trios where we've had some lower DPS on the teams and ended up with close to 400 stacks onto the main care pack at the end, which is to say he's doing 5 times damage, which is not great.
No.
But it's an adventure. It's definitely a challenge.
How have yours gone like that, David? I mean, or have you mostly been doing solo hard mode?
Yeah, I've been doing mostly solo, and they take me forever because I haven't had a chance to just like do a ton of it because I've been mostly focusing on getting Greco on my Iron Man so I could feel more comfortable soloing on my Iron Man, which I got last night.
Congratulations!
Yeah, finally got it. But yeah, so I have done, you know, basically what he was describing. So you just like switch between clones and eat up so that they don't die and hope for the best. And if the best doesn't happen, you barricade and hope that barricade and immortality save you, which is definitely not a good method. There's like much faster ones now. And also trios have gotten so efficient. It seems like people are pretty consistently averaging like 220 to 230 at this point for trio. So it seems like that's probably the best.
That's not
way
too
to
bad.
Do
that's not
it.
Too bad.
The other thing too is that if you really wanted to, because of the way that the time button works, and if you also have the raid's armor to reset your defensive abilities, you can be, there's a rotation you can use where you're dropping like a Death Swiftness or a Sunshine and also 3 consecutive barricades and devotions. You can effectively be undamageable for about 90 to 100 seconds if you really wanted to, which is kind of what makes this doable given the really high damage numbers.
And here comes the power of time travel in RuneScape, and there's always a question of how we're
it turns out time travel is really, really good.
Yeah, and the book that lets you time travel is also really good. We'll talk about that later.
Anything else on the hard mode mechanics without getting too much in the weeds, either of you?
That's all of it. That's everything.
I would say it's a place worth using Hydrix bolts. You get a lot of them back anyway, so I like them for especially in Death Swiftness.
Yeah.
All right.
Kind of like I talked about last time, you have to be able to use all the adrenaline you made, so you need to have something to push that out with, some abilities or an EOF or something. But they're great use.
Yeah. Yeah. Just bring like SGB EOF and Darkboat EOF. And
these words he's speaking, folks. Means that you want a Saren Godbow and a Dark Bow in an Essence of Finality, which is the item that came out last year, in August, actually, that allows you to...
It's been a year?
Yeah, it's been out for a year.
That's wild. I feel like it was yesterday. I can't believe that.
It's so new and shiny and fun.
Allows you to fire off special attacks. All right. Before we move on to the drops, I realize I didn't put this in the notes, but we should have a listen to this boss for a bit, shouldn't we? And the music behind it. Go ahead.
And I know we're dragging on. I really think it's important to talk about the fact that you can rejoin this boss if you die in a group.
Oh, yeah.
There's no kill count. Yeah. There's no kill count, and if you die and you're in a group of two or three people, you can just come back in and get loot. You don't get a kill time. You get kill count. It's great.
That is something that surprised me when I first went down there. I was thinking, where am I? Am I going to have to get 40 kill count to go? But no, you just go straight in.
Yeah.
And the rejoining thing is incredible. I wish they did that for more bosses. Like, I think Solak should be rejoinable, and I mean, maybe that makes it too easy or something. But I don't. I quite like that.
I also want to just mention a couple. Just off the cuff things,
please.
Which is he's unquestionably and without a doubt the best place in the game to use Ruby Becriminal Bolts, especially normal mode, because he never falls below 50,000 HP, so they are almost always the most efficient bolt choice for damage, because Ruby Bolts fall off when your target has low HP, and
would
so since he doesn't get
than,
there for the first three,
they're better than the poison bolts.
Yes, they will be 3 to 4 times as much damage increase as the poison bolts. I don't think they rival Hydrix bolts if you've got the full setup, but if you don't have that full setup, they should be a 15 to 20% or 10 to 20% damage increase. Lower damage if you are a person who does more damage. Higher damage if you are a person who is newer into PVMing. They are the best bolts. This is the best place to use them because they don't get that damage fall off. You don't need a different switch to use at the end of a boss kill. Like they do so much here. It's amazing.
I will say, like, maybe this is too in the weeds, but they do have a 6 second cooldown, so it's still worth switching because after they proc, you should switch and then 6 seconds later put them back on.
If you do the math and you say that a person does not have the greater ricochet ability, Ruby Criminal Bolts, assuming they're hitting on Karapak, will do about 9,000 damage every activation. A typical range rotation without greater ricochet, you hit 45 to 50 times. If you take out the times when they're on cooldown, you get 3 to 4 bolt procs per minute, which should be about 36,000 damage, which should add close to 20 to 25% rotation, additional damage.
Which is a lot more than the Emerald ones.
Which 25,000 a minute, he only has 530,000 health points. If you're taking a 3 minute kill, that's suddenly he has 20% less.
Because I was sitting here and I've been using these emerald ones, but I have a stack of ruby in my bank as well that I should have picked up. So
plus those 10 and 12k hits are just satisfying.
Yeah. What ammo have you been using, Zant? We should have asked.
I've been using rubies.
Okay.
Love my rubies.
And then the shadow ring, because mechanics for the boss.
I mentioned that.
We have
the
quest
stun.
Locked. We have quest locked, making the boss fun. You can do him without the ring, but he is much less enjoyable.
I remember on day one, there was a lot of question on the site that shall not be named that said, you upgrade your ring, it just makes you take more damage. But honestly, upgrading the ring for me made it a whole lot more accessible.
Yes.
Agreed. So anyways, that's all. That was my list of things for him.
All right. David, anything else? Mechanic
that's
wise?
All. Yeah, that's it. I think that sounds good.
Zant?
I just have something maybe bigger picture with this, but maybe that should wait for after we talk about rewards.
All right, sure. After rewards is fine. But let's have a listen to the boss because, it is absolutely wonderful how this was put together and everything that the environment builds up to with this. So here we go. Let me just go to the point where we're in.
Why can't you just let it be, World Guardian? I'll tear right through you. Place.
resist the raw power of the staff.
I think with everything built in together, the boss, the mechanics, the environment, and of course this wonderful music track, I think that's just the cherry on top for this entire thing. I was absolutely in awe of the environment when I first fought it. How do you guys feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's really nice. We get to see what it's like inside the Colosseum that we've saw before. And I think it just fits really well. Feels very appropriate. And actually, my question for Soon is kind of related to that.
All right. Well, we'll save that. Thaxi, David, what did you guys think of the immersion level? Because I know you PVMers like to play on lower quality sometimes. I don't know if it's because you have to or if it just, you know, makes things feel better.
I have a crappy Mac computer does not like to run the game.
David?
Otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I can't run the game unless it's on minimum.
So. Okay.
The I will say, I do think that the... when you turn the lighting on everything, the arena is amazing. And then just a quick shout to what they were saying on the stream this week, where Ramen very much said, well, we weren't sure where we were going to put this yet, if it was just going to be in the city. And we saw the Colosseum that they'd put into the city of Centistan in the quest that they were developing. We're like, hey, can I use the Colosseum? Can I use the Colosseum?
It's perfect.
And they said, oh, we hadn't. Okay, we'll make an environment for it.
I also
apparently how that happened.
I also just love the audio behind this boss too.
Yeah, the voiceover. Oh, it's so grainy. It hits different.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait until we have access to a truly high quality version from Jagex of this track, because this whole thing with the other Centistan stuff that we've had, this is probably some of their best work ever. I know we've said that before for archaeology and whatnot, but I feel like the audio team has put this boss one level up above anything they've done before audio wise.
One of the audio designers, and I think they might have been retweeted either by Ramen or the official Jagex accounts, submitted, they posted on Twitter, and I don't know the quality on this necessarily, but they did post the original music track. So I assume that maybe that's a link to a higher quality version.
Okay.
It might be worth checking.
Yeah.
For anybody who wants to hear
and
it.
I've actually heard of people who haven't even done the boss yet just listening to the track on loop, believe it or not. So there's that too. So. All in all, well done on the environment and music. All right, let us move on. There, of course, with any boss fight, it's not complete with a few bugs on launch. We're, of course, going to talk about the staff after. Everybody wants to hear about the staff. There's some bugs associated with that. But I don't know which of you put this into the rundown, Thaxi or David, but if you want to take us through the bugs, that would be wonderful. What do you mean by the first one here, Rift Skip?
Yeah, so that's what I called just being able to, at various points, just walk under him to not be damaged by a bunch of things. I don't know if that... you said that was patched yesterday, right? It was hot...
Yeah, so Ramen said on the stream that he had removed the ability to do that. I don't know if it was actually done. I have not tried it since then.
Yeah, I think it was removed relatively quickly, but it was relatively minor.
Yeah, that was my exact.
A lot of times there are squares that you could stand on or you could stand under a boss and it no longer can hit you for a certain mechanic, but I don't think it's too big of a deal.
All right, next up, when you're phasing or transitioning between phases, they move that to non-ability damage, and I definitely caught on this that you were still able to damage the boss a little bit before that, but now you're basically, it's a big fat nope, you can't damage him when he's phasing.
Yeah, he could take poison damage, and was it familiar damage too? That he
yes. Do you do you remember when I was on a couple weeks ago? We were talking about the Wyvern crossbow.
Yes,
and how that had the ability to apply like 40,000 damage per minute of poison.
Uh huh.
Imagine you have, I don't know, three people who maybe have that set up and only have 50,000 life points on the first phase of the boss, and suddenly the boss is at zero health points. Oops.
So would the fight just end with that, or
it did?
Oh, it did.
Oh, yeah, it sure did. Yeah, there was a similar bug on Solak release where there was the transition to the final phase. He can't fall under a certain health threshold, and you could just sit there and tank the final phase for like an hour and just let your steel titans and poison whittle it down to no HP and then basically skip the final phase.
All right.
There was a lot of players had their comp capes removed because that was abused by so many people to get their one kill for comp.
Right. Now, what's this about Quick Chat? Was he crashing Quick Chat? Or kill count Quick Chat?
Oh, no, this one is also incredibly minor. I don't know if this has been fixed, but there was no differentiation between normal mode and hard mode when you quick chatted. Yeah. So you'd quick chat your normal mode KC, and it would just say, "I have killed X Carapac," and you would quick chat hard mode KC. It would just, okay, yeah. So that's also been hot fixed.
All right, everything so far very minor, very minor. What did you mean by training points?
If you are in a hard mode team with other players who do not have 10 normal mode KC, you get training points for them. Like so you could be with people who have 100 hard mode KC but 0 normal mode KC, and if you kill it in hard mode with them, you will still get training points because it will like have them be as under 10 total kills.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Also like irrelevant. I don't know. What do training points even get you? Like a pet?
They get you a little owl.
Yeah, a little owl. Yeah, a cute
the
little
thing,
owl.
They get you a little mortarboard headpiece. And there's one other thing, too. There's three rewards for, I think it's like 50, 250, and 500.
The owl and the mortarboard headpiece are confirmed devalued.
Well, and I mean, if that's all we got so far, minus some of the staff things, that's really not too bad for something that people have been pounding on for about four or five days at this point.
The other thing that they did hotfix is that on release, his jumping slam that does melee damage, if you stayed underneath it, he would not advance into any other mechanics. So if you have somebody who's being real brave and wants to just tank a bunch of melee hits, you could just do that. And you could just take the hits and just kill the boss without having to deal with any other mechanics. They have also since changed that so that it does increasing melee damage over time.
Good.
So it's not very punishing, but if you try to abuse it, it hits you.
Yeah,
I did notice that early on when I was talking. Yeah, earlier I talked about enhanced devoted proccing during that. Yeah, I did notice before it used to not increase the damage. You could just sit under there a lot more.
I mean, you can still, if you're in tank armor with reanimate dead, you can still sit under there for a good 10, 20 seconds.
Yeah, that's not bad, but... Damage.
But, yeah. Yep, they fixed it.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to some of the drop tables then. Or is there anything else in the bugs that we need to catch up with?
Okay. I'm gonna start this one, because I think his common drop rewards are chef's kiss.
All right. We might have a bit of a disagreement.
Yeah, they're incredible. Oh. So perfect. Especially for Iron Man. Oh my god, amazing.
Yes, Iron Man in particular. But the there's categories in this drop table, right? So you have a few things that before were incredibly pricey to use that were effectively reserved for high tier PVM that are now much more accessible. Namely, like your light Animica, because we had dark Animica dropping from ED3, but no light, only from Telos. We've got Hydrix tips and adrenaline crystals, which were Slayer, but
there was...
Go ahead, David, if you're going to say something.
I would say they Rakshin Solak as well, but yes. You're right. Oh, there's definitely an imbalance.
It's solely from high tier PVM, and now you have a.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, never mind. Yeah. Never mind. What you're saying, I misunderstood totally. Okay, yeah.
The dark anime could come from ED3, that's very much accessible to everybody, but the light anime were much more expensive, which is odd because you need one of each to make the bars.
They were much
more expensive because they only came from these high tier bosses. So I think this is a good drop.
So I'm going to rain on your parade here, and I'm going to say that I'm still not convinced that we need to have things like Stone Spirits dropping at all from PVM.
I think we're going to get to that too, because that's skilling supplies being dropped from bosses, and that is another conversation.
But the first category, really, the only skilling supply on the main table is that Animica. And
I don't think that's true. Interestingly.
Okay,
so I've got these categories out. So we've got things that are too pricey, things that they just introduced. You've got some Prayer XP, Alkables, and Skilling Spice. So second category, things they just introduced, Cannonballs and Soul Runes for the new spells. Both of those were rising or will rise. Good job putting things that are going to rise on a drop table. Personal opinion. They've got some Prayer XP and new bones. Nice. Fun. They'll keep everything because prayer is always slowly rising for whatever reason. That's a good thing that's going to go down a bit. Some alkables, right? We've got your salvage. You've got your battle staffs. Why
fire battle
staffs?
I don't know. In this case, which is a weird
reasons.
Choice, honestly.
Yeah. Do air. Give me air
The whole theme is fire, though, right? Like the theme of the Nodon font is fire, isn't it?
That's supposedly true. Joss is the fire god. Wen is the water god. Bic is the earth god. I mean, they're not. This is not in any way what they stand for. Joss is the god of progression.
Yeah,
supposedly.
Right.
But so they're trying to avoid that. But why fire? Who knows? The reasons. They should hold value, I suppose. As long as all four bosses don't drop them, I think probably fine.
Yeah.
Maybe they will. And it'll just be like everybody knows this is the thing you elk.
So my big concern on that drop table that what we've talked about before is the soul runes and the light animicas.
So the other things that the last two things we haven't talked about that drop are dragonhide and dragonstones. Both of those are crafting supplies. They are skilling supplies, and that is basically their only use.
Wait, I have a question, Shane. Why do you think that? Why is that bad? Why are soul runes bad?
I am of the opinion that things like your soul rune should only come into game through the rune crafting skill.
But soul runes only come into the game through shop runs. They don't come into the game through rune crafting skill.
I know. I'm just saying it should be made so that rune crafting is the primary way that.
Yeah, in an ideal world,
that would require completely redoing the soul altar because you get so few soul runes per hour from the soul.
I know,
altar,
and they were meant to be rare, and that's fine.
But then you can't have a spell that requires using thousands of them per hour.
Right, and that becomes a balancing question.
Then that spell is just useless.
I mean, the solution there is that if you put spells into the game that require to use two or three times as many of the runes, you just have the altar give you twice as many runes, and you've now given money to the skillers. And I will say
it would have to be a good solution.
But the PVMers are the ones using the runes, so now they're getting them here. Yeah. I think it's not the worst choice. I understand why they put them on the table, but I hear you in terms of skilling things should be kept for skilling. And I think stone spirits in general.
We've had this discussion time and time again, and it always comes back to
item.
You know, just remove them from everything, honestly.
I like having some kind of skilling drops available from PVM. This is effectively saying that PVM can benefit the skillers. It's not. I like the stone spirit versus just straight up dropping ore, because this is saying, skillers, here's this thing. It's cheaper than the ore, so you're going to make additional money by using this without doing anything different. That's the, like, here's how PVM is going to give money to the skillers.
Yeah, and, you know, on the side of Royal Dragonhide, all the Dragonhide, you have to remember where it is in the name. It comes from the dragon. And Karapak, Dragonkin, there's got to be that connection there. So that's why that one doesn't bother me that much.
The Dragonhide and the Dragonstones, I think crafting is in a really weird place.
Boy, is it.
Training crafting is challenging and expensive, and there's no, like, this is how you should train crafting. It's like, okay, well, do these things, I guess, for a lot of time bank standing, ? Because Dragonhide, like you say, only comes into the game as drop, a lot of crafting material does, other than flax, which also, let's be honest, comes in the game through the rare drop table.
Speaking of that, are we ready to move on to the tropes?
Which is, so, skilling supplies. The boss doesn't drop a ton of them. The troves, though. Here's what I think about troves. Troves are your new rare drop table.
Yep, that's exactly
troves,
it.
Troves are the Elder God Wars rare drop table. Here's a random drop, a small chance for a small amount of something that shouldn't be here.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. And to get the tier 2 troves, you need to have the Pontifex Shadow Ring equipped, which I don't think. Are you guys bringing that and then swapping it to the end for your kills, the Karapak, or how are you guys doing that? You are? Okay.
Yes.
I am not.
I really appreciate the super restores coming from those troves.
All right, well, let's talk about Trove Tier 1. I'm just going to read some items off that it drops. Stink Shroom Spore, Manuscript of Jazz, we'll talk about that later. Blood Runes, Garana, Seeds, Nature Runes, Extreme Magic and Ranging Potions, Super Attack, Super Restores, Regular Battle Staves. And these are all, it drops all multiples of these that I've been running through. And I feel like I've been getting the most embarrassing drops out of all my troves because they've been largely just, you know, the large pieces of salvage and whatnot.
Yeah. It's alchemies and spelling supplies.
I'm pretty happy about the extremes for Iron Man. That's fun. And the supers as well.
Wait, you said extremes?
Yes.
It drops extremes. Yeah. I mean, I assume it works that's like a, like Araxor, where you have to have the Herblore level to get it. But yeah, it drops extremes.
Oh, that's just nice to not be, have to make them all the time.
It drops things that are, those, like, extremes, fairly exclusively skilling supplies. You've got some Herblore stuff in there, you've got some crafting stuff in there.
The other fun stuff that you're going to see from this is diamonds, dragonstones, and potentially onyx. As I was saying also, there's a chance of getting 200 flax from the Tier 1 trove.
I wouldn't mind 200 flask.
Yeah, so would I. I meant flax. Hydrix Bolt Tips, again, that's making an appearance, of course, after our discussion on how PBMers use those, but it's just costs you an arm and a leg to use, so, I mean, if you guys want that, sure, go for it. And what I'm...
to not cost an arm and a leg, and they are working on that, and I appreciate it.
What I'm seeing going up
I
from...
If they do four bosses, I hope Hydrix comes from all four, for sure.
So, I agree.
What I'm seeing going up from tier one to tier two on the trove, it looks like the drop table has just been refined a little bit, and some of the lower level things aren't there, like the diamonds aren't there, for example. The flax isn't there on tier two. The runes aren't there on tier two. Quantities are tweaked.
The quantities are higher, yeah. Overall, they seem to be like 50 maybe-ish percent more money on average. I've been bringing the ring for all of the slaying that I've been doing, because the Slayer creature dropped them as well, and we'll leave that for another podcast. But I've not been bringing the ring. My inventory has enough things in it already for the actual boss.
Yeah. And, I mean, I honestly feel like with the trove, you can take it or leave it. It's not like you're going to miss out if you don't have the tier 2 equipped. Tier 1 is perfectly good enough, I think.
They are not economy breaking. All of Karapak's main common drops are much lower in price other than the Alkaballs, which is fine for me. The a lot of those things were either overpriced or, you know, had some things that it's good that they're being used, so they're coming into the economy. The troves are very much like, here, we're going to sprinkle in some other stuff you might want.
Yeah, it's just that little bit on top. That makes sense. All right, well, let's talk about things that are shooting up in the economy and probably do need to shoot up based on how it's going to work number-wise. Of course, one of the main things that Karapak was advertised to drop was the greater concentrated blast ability, upgrading concentrated blast from its regular version. And we were talking a little bit about this in pre-show, and Thaxi, again, you feel like this is a dark horse and that people really aren't appreciating it to the level they should be.
Oh my God. This thing is... honestly, I do believe that the math shows that this thing is dumb power. It's silly. It's silly how much of a buff this is and how much it doesn't seem like one.
Yeah, because the community hasn't been making a huge rumble about it, which, you know, if it's the way you describe it, then they should. But I think that's just the classic case of people with their heads in the sand and stuck in their ways.
The staff alone, upgrading from a tier 92 to a tier 93, tier 95, sorry, you get about 3% extra damage. The special attack is a lot, and is also very much in flux, so I'm not quite sure where to put that. If we put that aside for now, this is by far, unquestionably, without a shadow of a doubt, by several time is the largest increase, the largest buff to combat of any of the things that this drop.
And you're talking greater concentrated blast currently.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So
now let me just read on the tin of what it does compared to regular concentrated blast.
And then I'll do the under the hood.
70 to 290 total ability damage over 1.8 seconds, up from 48 to 246% over 2.4 seconds. And for every channeled hit, gain 5% critical strike chance on your next ability.
Right. And at first blush, that sounds okay. We get an average of 33% weapon damage when we use this ability. Okay. The hidden thing about this that is incredibly important is that one tick less time frame.
Yep.
And here's so the way that this works. Firstly, it is still a channeled ability, and like most channeled abilities in the game, when you finish the ability, unless you immediately attack the boss, or you are on full manual, or you queue another ability to fire, you will have a one tick gap. And again, people are saying 0.6 seconds, what's the huge deal for that? The issue is that in every other ranged, or every other ability rotation, magic and ranged included, usually the second ability on your bar, give or take first three, is the 5-second channeled ability, because it, or not channeled, the 5-second ability, because it does good damage. Almost all of them do consistent good damage. They allow you to have a consistent rotation for your basics. It's that way on most of the refo bars. The exception to that has always been magic, and that's because of the way that concentrated blast worked before, the lesser concentrated blast. The global ability cooldown is 1.8 seconds. So having an ability that lasts for 2.4 seconds means that you either cancel by firing off another ability early, by manually doing that, and you miss the last hit, which is the largest hit, and that extra 15% then critical strike chance on your next attack, you skip that by just going to your next ability, or you take that extra hit and you slow your rotation down. And if you're using Revolution, you get an extra tick of pause afterwards because it's channeled ability, and this is suddenly a 3-second ability when most abilities are 1.8 seconds. What that means is you're getting a 1.2-second gap where you're only doing that third hit of this ability. And that damage is very low for that amount of time. So Concentrated Blast was a bad, bad choice. It was not a good ability, and it was much farther down in these bars than every other 5-second ability has been. And you could use it as manual, and you could kind of cancel it. You could choose if you wanted to let it last for 3 ticks or 4 ticks, or just let Revo fire at every 5th tick. But because it's such a low cooldown, and it should be so integral in rotation, this is something we use up to 12 times a minute. Realistically, you know, it's 9 tick cooldown, 3 to 5 tick ability. Like, you're using this for a 40% of your rotation sometimes. It's a super integral part of the magic rotation. And so what they've done is they've said this ability suddenly does 10 to 15% more damage when you use it. So it's already 40% of your ability rotation. Oh, hey, well, now your 40% of your ability rotation is now doing 15% more damage. That's big. And then even on top of that, they're making that one tick shorter. So it's still a channeled ability. So it's 3 damage ticks if you apply an extra ability right afterward, which is right on your global cooldown. You don't miss that third hit anymore. Or if you wait that 4th tick, you're just running full revolution, it only takes 80% as long to fire. And so you're gaining, if you're using it 10 times, you're putting it at the front of your ability bar where it should be, you're gaining 10 ticks back every minute, which a minute is 100 ticks. That's just 10% more damage on top of the 15% more damage that it does. And again, the numbers on that don't quite math out that way. But needless to say, this is, if magic was 20% damage behind range, this is a lot to make up for that, and people are not paying attention to
it. So you're saying that with this, you could probably bring magic up to the point where ranged is. And does that factor in with...
No, not alone. Okay. Not alone, absolutely not. I think with the other updates that have come, if you're using the new staff and the special attack gets fixed so that it does more than it currently does, but less than it was doing on Monday, I would say yes. And that's my argument for this, is that Concentrated Blast, you use it so much and it is such an integral part of most people's rotations, that having it buffed on such a low cooldown is huge. And so people are sleeping on this. And I think the other thing to consider, and this is true, is that you're now doing 3 hits in 1.8 seconds instead of 2 hits for most people who are caring about the number of things they're applying. And this is now becoming a Gricko situation, where greater ricochet, every 10 seconds, you apply 7 hits. This is every 5 seconds, you apply 3 hits. And if we do the math on that, oh yeah, it's about the same. So if you're using something like the Blood Reaver, where the number of times you hit the boss can each apply poison, this is in that ballpark now, where before ranged was like, I'm going to hit the boss 80 times in a minute, whereas magic is hitting the boss 40 times. Magic is now hitting the boss 70 times in a minute. And that's a lot, and that will do a lot of damage.
Because how does it work with stacks from the new spells?
I believe you should, because channeled abilities for range will give you a stack of they apply Bicriminal Bolts on hit supply on channeled ability hits.
I'm gonna try it on a dummy roll.
I believe you do. I did some runs with Karabak today earlier, and I bought this last night. And I was just racking up those rack stacks. I am fairly certain that it will give you 3 full stacks of that in a single global cooldown every 3 seconds, and each of those can apply poison damage, which 20% chance with Cinderbanes means you've got 24% ability damage just in poison damage. Like, there's a lot of things that add on top of this stack after stack after stack that, like, there's 2 ways that damage is increased in the game. It's a flat damage increase, like your skirmishers that say you now just do 6% more damage, have fun. And then there's these, like, insidious, every time you hit something, you apply 8% ability damage. You apply 5% ability damage. Like, with the Reaver, with the Blood Reaver, oh, you're going to hit
the
boss
again.
So
what I'm getting here is that it's just like with the Emerald Bolt discussion, it's not a matter of itself being that far ahead. It's just when you factor it in with everything else we have and everything we've been doing, it really starts to add up.
I tested it on a dummy. It does give you 3 stacks.
Yeah. So it's giving you additional stacks of Exsanguinate, which is 1% additional ability power. It gives you cheaper, you know, all the new spell effects. Like, this does for magic, this puts magic in a very similar hits on a target, ability hits on a target per minute as ranged.
The problem is that those don't give you free adrenaline for dumping overpowered special attack.
The problem is that
Hydrix literally bolts Hydrix bolts.
It's literally Hydrix bolts are just the most overpowered thing on the planet, and they interact with the UFs nicely. But for the average person, if you're ignoring if Hydrix bolts are still too expensive to use, which they maybe won't be, but this Hydrix bolts aside probably brings magic. It does a lot to close the gap. This ability alone does a lot to close the gap, and I really think people are sleeping on it because of that.
I will say top-end mage gear is still about, like, what, a fifth of the price of top-end range gear, or a fourth of the price,
it's
maybe?
So cheap. Part of that, too, is the price of Blackstone Hearts are cheap, because ED2 is reasonable to solo, and ED1 is challenging to solo.
Sure,
but I was just saying,
like, if you're going to try to do a budget setup for high-end bossing,
yeah,
Grico's, like, 1.6, this thing is, billion, like, 45 mil, 45 mil, 50
mil? It's 50... I got it last night for 60. I think it will rise. I think people are going to realize that it's busted, and it's going to rise.
Well, yeah, and of course, the usual caveat is you're listening to this, prices will go up.
It only rise if what was I going to say? It only rise if it becomes better than range, though, because I think that, like, the people,
maybe,
I don't know. They're just
I think people will buy it who want to use magic. And it's going to be a tenth, even if it rises, it's not getting up 150 mil, right? Like, it drops so much more.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it, like, could get up to, like, 150.
It's not getting in the 1.6 bill range. There's not a chance that
no,
happens
especially
in any universe.
Given the way the boss works.
You think about how people are AFK in Grigorovic with a Wyvern crossbow because you're hitting the boss a lot. Magic now effectively has the ability to hit the boss that many times. So with a tier 90 instead of a tier 85, And you lose about 30 hits a minute by not having the Wyvern Crossbow passive. Nah. But like, if you add reanimate dead on top of this, you're wearing two pieces of tank armor, or maybe you're just wearing the tank cloak. Like, very suddenly, you can AFK Greg on magic now because this ability exists.
Yeah, this is starting to look really interesting, Zant. Any thoughts on this? Because I know these numbers are probably beyond you and me. And if any listeners have questions about this, please do bring this up, because we can always come back on this. But I think if I can sum this up the way you're describing it, is that this is an ability that right now is a sleeper, but it has a huge possibility of just making magic that tiny, tiny little bit better, that when you combine it with other things, it starts to become competitive with ranged.
At a mid-tier PVM level, this, like, if you are a person who cannot afford greater ricochet and cannot afford to use Hydrix Bolts, magic is now the best in-slot style for you if you can afford this ability. I feel very comfortable saying that.
Do you think it's better than Ruby Bolts at Karapak?
I don't, because I think Ruby Bolts are busted. Bolts are a similar 15%.
That's the problem, is like, if you use bolts correctly, they're just too good.
But I think it's very comparable, because I think that this will make, with poison, on poisonable creatures, I think this will make magic do more damage than ranged. I think for Slayer, magic is now better than ranged. I think for creatures that you don't use Ruby Criminal Bolts on all the time, magic is now better.
Magic is already better at Slayer, because chain is so good for so many tasks that are
greater chain. Sure, I mean,
and then we get into the point of the discussion where you're going to be spending fire runes, blood runes, and maybe even soul runes to cast some of these things. And that question about the boss drop
compared to
Hydrix
is a big deal.
Compared to Ruby Bolts, you're running an accessible setup.
If you're switching from from Bacramental Bolts to this, it's a cost downgrade. So that
the thing is that. If you don't use Rack, you can make a very effective magic rotation without Rack in it. And you can Revolution without Rack. You only have to pay the upfront rune cost to get to like 12 casts of Exsanguinate. And then, which is what, 12 death, 12 blood runes and 24 fire runes?
Yeah,
don't pay runes. So that's the price of a couple of Ruby Bacrimonial Bolts, a couple of Emerald Bolts.
And that's really not too bad when you think about it. So,
no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I will say it's definitely interesting. Concentrated Blast has such an interesting history in this game. Like, there's so many bugs that were created by that ability at certain bosses, like Virago, and then...
It was a problem and it was
nerfs
bad.
And buffs.
It was a problem and it was bad, and now it's real good.
All right, let's move on to the Scripture of Jazz then.
Yes,
this is the God book, kind of like the old other God books. Has a chance to drop from Karapak. You charge it with the Jazz manuscripts that we talked about previously, and this is effectively your own little passive time travel device, so to speak, because what it effectively does is it will combine the damage you do over the time that its ability is active, and then it will deal, I think it's what, 20% of that damage out in one burst after the ability ends, if I remember it correctly.
Yes. Yeah, and it is capped.
It is damage capped, which is to say that if you can output more than 50,000 damage in 10 seconds... which a lot of people can, you're probably max hitting this thing. With that said, and I promise this is the last time I'm going to do big math today, this is also being slept on and is overpowered. Kind of.
What do you mean by overpowered? Like,
it is not better than a Grimoire.
Yeah, because it's definitely...
It is better, okay, so here's my issue with this. And Shane, if you're on the wiki page for the testament,
I am.
Do me a solid, scroll down to the bottom. I want you to highlight the point in the math where it says you hit the boss 33 times per minute. I'm going to tell you right now, because I've mentioned this previously on 5 minutes ago, that is wrong. Because channeled abilities, every hit of a channeled ability applies things, and every hit of a bleed does not apply anything. And so previously, without Greater Concentrated Blast, magic hits about 45 times a minute. Melee is the hardest one because the channels do not make you hit things faster.
Right.
Melee, you're hitting 40 times a minute. Ranged without Greater Ricochet, you're about 50 times. With Greater Ricochet, you're about 80 times. So there's your ranges. Not 33. And you'll notice that the math that they say, it should be like 33 would give you like 3% damage increase, plus you get this like 0.25% for something else. It doesn't add up to the 4.59 and whatever the wiki has right now. So somebody's gone in and just edited and said, here's the real number. And 4.59 is the real number if you say that you're activating this thing because you can afford it, you've bought it. And
it has been edited. It says 45 to 85 chances to proc.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Because that's reasonable. Somebody who's been listening to me and paying attention to things that are actually happening is on board. If you're doing 33 times a minute, effectively what this thing does is every 10 seconds, right? Every 10 seconds, you fire off your build. Whenever it's not charging up, whenever it's not in that 10 seconds, it's a 5% chance to activate, is what my understanding is. Which means that on average, you need to hit something 20 times in order for it to activate. So how much time does it take you to hit the boss 20 times is the limiter for this. So it's 10 seconds plus that amount of time. If you're using Greater Ricochet, you're hitting the boss 80 times, that's 15 seconds, which means it's a 25-second rotation for when every time this thing fires is 25 seconds. That means you're firing it 2 and a bit times a minute. And you assume that for the most people that are going to be using this, it's... Or even people that aren't, like say you're not quite hit capping. Most people will approach the hit cap. So say you hit 9 to 10,000 damage with this thing. And you're using Greater Ricochet, so you're affording it, right? If you're using Greater Ricochet or Greater Concentrated Blast, because it's in that 70 to 75, like Greater Concentrated Blast is OP, man! You're firing this thing off slightly more than twice a minute. Say 2.4 times, I think, is the math, how I worked the math out on earlier. 2.4 times 10,000, oh hey, 24,000 damage. If my current damage rotation with all of the buffs and overloads and prayers and familiars and everything approaches 300,000 damage a minute. But we'll say, you know, maybe I'm off the boss sometimes or doing other things. Like, this is suddenly 8 to 10% additional damage. Now, quick math on 8 to 10% additional damage. A scrimshaw is 5%. A greater scrimshaw is 6.6%. Oh, hold the phone. This is 8? This is 8%? Wait. The grimoire is, according to the wiki, and I don't know the math on the grimoire because the grimoire has a lot of things that interact in very funny ways. But the math for the grimoire on the wiki says 8 to 9%. Oh, hey, wait a second. This is 8 to 9%? That's 8 to 9%? That costs 10 mil per hour to run, and this costs 250k. Oh, hold the phone.
Yeah.
This thing is gross. And again, that's with Greater Concentrated Blast or Greater Ricochet.
Right,
if you don't have those abilities, you're hitting it 50 times a minute, suddenly the damage drops and you're only hitting, oh gosh, 17,000 damage a minute.
Right,
this is only doing this thing, 5% additional damage. Oh, still good.
This thing
still
caught my eye because when you look at this, it says any damage you do, it will reflect back 20% of it. Now, of course, that's based on the number of attacks you do, but anybody knows the more damage you do, the more powerful this thing is going to become. In effect, it's almost like a feedback loop, and this is exactly the way time travel is done in most places, is that it allows you to, in effect, wipe that stuff all together and channel it back out towards whatever you're fighting. So I agree with you that I think this one's definitely a sleeper. Zant, I know you got one of these as a drop. Was it the book or was it the ability you got?
I actually got the gloves.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to the gloves then.
We'll get there. So I think this thing is another sleeper OP. With that said, and I think, you know, David mentioned this, is that like, the highest tier of players right now is doing massively more damage, more than 300,000 damage a minute. You're in 350 to 450, like kind of depending on rotation and where you are. And once you get above 300,000, the thing stops doing extra damage because you're doing more than 50,000 damage in 10 seconds. And so for those people, it is less effective. It is a smaller increase. For those people, the Grimoire will still be better. And generally speaking, the Grimoire will still be better. It interacts very nicely with the staff. We'll get there. But for how much cheaper it is. Another thing that I think is being a little slept on, but again, it's only useful if you're in that population of people that's mid-tier, that's
right.
not doing redonkulous damage, but has unlocked enough of these ability unlocks to hit the boss a bunch of times.
So this is, this is all on that same vein of targeting that mid-tier group who's not your high-end PvMer, because that's even what the spells did for City of Sintistan as well. It's all been targeted at that specific group, and when you start taking a few steps back, this starts to look like a really interesting design on that.
Well, I think it's good for everyone, though, because even high-tier PvMers need to AFK bosses for their Golden Reaper title. So it's basically anywhere where you're not making enough money that it's worth using a different
Rocket
Pod item, this thing is worth. And it's also incredible for Iron Men, because unless you're really into clues, which like some Iron Men are, obviously, because you need so many EOFs and have to get so many fortunates, but until you go through the clue grind, it can be a struggle to justify using pocket slot items, and so this is pretty great for them. I mean, you got to get the book, but it's the normal mode boss is pretty easy to camp, so it's fine. And you just get a ton of pages, just like so many pages.
This is going to be used by high-end PvMers anywhere they're not going for speed kills or being expected to hold out the highest DPS. This is going to not equal but approach the Grimoire and be, this is going to save people a lot of money.
Do we think the prices are going to shoot up on this?
They did. They dropped down to 50 million for a couple of days. They were up to 100 million last night. They're back down to 80 million today. Nobody knows quite what to think about this thing. It's going to land somewhere, but there's enough people doing Carapac that I think they'll come into the game at a reasonable rate.
Yeah.
It should be. Again, it's not that multi-billion coin upgrade. It's a great upgrade for probably a mid-tier price. So power creep, but also good.
Yeah, and that's how you buff games in this day and age. So let's move on. Let's move on to the gloves right now. Carapax wrist wraps, magic based gloves.
I do not think this one is a sleeper. I don't know if you maybe I'm wrong,
but
I think this one is a snooze fest.
They're nice. They are. And correct me if I'm forgetting about a glove. They're the best in slot gloves for magic where Cinderbanes don't work.
I think that
having 25% additional damage on combust, regardless of how long it takes to activate. But how long it takes to activate? There's some funny mechanics with that. It technically the gloves when you apply combust something, they apply a debuff to the boss that is global, so everybody's combusts now suddenly work, which is
that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, well, the way that I understood it last week was that you would have to apply combust, then you could walk your combust, then you could dragon breath, and it would apply the rest of the hits of your combust at plus 25. Or you could just send your dragon breath, and then send your combust, and all the hits would hit for 25 without the walking damage. It makes the bosses harder to walk. It makes combust easier to use as an AFK ability. I think group PVMing kind of it should increase overall damage because only one person can have combust on a boss at a time. Single person high tier PVM, maybe they're not as useful because you're walking the bosses.
To me, it just seems like this is something you're just going to buy because of the magic stat associated with them and the boost.
This is the magic equivalent of Nightmare Gauntlets. It's saying we're going to give an ability some niche additional use and apply 25% extra damage to it. This is what they did to Snipe. They instead said, here's Dragon Breath, but also combust as extra damage.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Here's Nightmare Gauntlet for magic. So when your Cinderbanes don't work, here's your alternative potential best in slot situational kind of item. They're cheapest in because they're not as much of a damage increase as the other things. And, I bought a pair and I'll use them sometimes.
Yeah. I think that's probably all we need to say about this, that they're not, they don't have as many surprises behind them, as the other two. Zant, are you going to use your set or did you sell those all?
Oh, I've already sold them.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't use magic at all right now.
They are tier 85 power gloves, which means they're good. I mean, they're just generically a decent set of gloves. They're going to be, they'll probably fall to a level where they may be cheaper or as cheap as like, your Virtus gloves.
You know what the really good thing about this is
Sure.
we've gone through all the rewards from normal mode, and all of them are going to have a use into the future. And
Yeah.
so far at this point, Care Pack is not something you can just sit there and camp like Vindicta. You actually do have to pay a little bit of attention to it so far on this.
You're not using reanimate dead tanking because then you kind of
Yeah.
can.
But things are about to change, of course, with the Staff of Armadil, which is RuneScape's first tier 95 weapon, dropped exclusively from hard mode here with this. It was severely broken when it came into game.
I think it's an elder artifact, Shane. Why would you not be able to do several million damage per second? It is an elder artifact. If I can't cap out rune metrics at 2.17 whatever mil damage, I don't know why. Why else is it's an elder artifact?
Okay,
Come
so let's split this apart first. Tier 95,
like the staff.
about a 2 to 3% boost on tier 92. Magic based,
Cool.
of course.
Neat.
People, from what I understand, people still do. You guys still do the swapping between wand and book and staff for the four ticking, right?
I don't. I'm not sweaty enough for that.
Okay.
Some
I
people
do,
do.
because I mean I've been doing it for like 6 years now, so
Okay.
Interestingly, the interaction, especially with this, makes that somehow worse, which
Yeah,
is fun.
it sure does.
All right. So obviously it's a magic stick. It's going to do damage when you fire off your spells with it. Let's talk about the special attack. Instability only costs 50 adrenaline. Launches an
Only.
unstable
Yeah,
blast at your
that's high.
target.
That's 50 is high.
Well, I mean, you could have other specials that
Well,
cost 100.
that's true.
So it does 50 to 200% weapon damage, and each time you land a critical strike against your opponent, in the next 30 seconds, your staff will fire an extra spell. Oh my god, this was broken when
Before we get
this
into details,
launched. Okay.
I think the intention on this is your Zarus Godsword or your Saren Godbow. Or you're sorry, your Eldritch Crossbow, but for magic. This is the you get to pay
Yeah.
50% adrenaline once a minute to do like 25% more damage. That's for like 20 seconds. That's where I think they niched this in.
And it could also be seen as effectively adding in four ticking to the game because you're firing off that extra spell that you would normally do with a four tick, right?
Yes, and removing four ticking from the game, but I'll let you know.
All
Go,
right.
David, you were
So
saying
how
something.
do we want to attack this? Because obviously this has been broken. People have done absurdly crazy things. I don't
Well, do we
know.
want to talk about why it was broken?
Yes,
Yeah,
we
let's
do.
talk about the glitches. They're crazy.
So there's like the main glitch is that so every time you crit, you get a free auto. But the problem is that every time that auto would crit, every time one of your free autos would crit, that would create another crit. And then
Let's
that
set
second one could create another one. And so just
the
basically.
stage by clarifying two things here too. Finish your sentence. I don't want to like totally
Oh
derail you.
no, that's okay. It was just
Okay.
basically you just get infinite extra attacks.
Let's make this real clear. Those extra attacks that fired off, if you are on Ancients and you are using barrage spells, those extra attacks are a 3x3. They hit everything. Okay. So we put that into the world. Okay, hear me out. The follow-up to that, you can have a crit chance as high as about 35% static before ability bonuses from Concentrated Blast. You can, if you get a critical scroll from a Calgarian Demon, plus your 5% base crit chance, plus your 5% crit chance from, oh my gosh, what was it? Is an item or ability or something. Plus 12% from a grimoire, plus 8% from the Biting Four perk. You have 35% crit chance. Oh, wait, what? Yeah, that's right. 35% chance to hit within the top, to do 110 to 120% max damage of whatever you're attacking. So that's cool. Now, there's your crit chance, and this thing hits in a 9x9. So if you crit, it crits on everything. So if you have a 1 in 3 chance, say I'm, I don't know, let's just say I'm at Elite Dungeons 2 and I'm killing slimes. I attack, there's 15 slimes around me because they multiply like mad and they multiply on top of each other. In 9x9 in front of me, there are 15 slimes. I attack and I crit. I have just launched one auto attack. I'm in Legacy. I don't need to be in EOC for this. The next tick after that attack happens, I have just fired off 15 additional 9x9 attacks. One third of those can also crit. So we've got three more crits on, you guessed it, 15 targets. I now have 45 auto attacks going out onto 9 targets the tick after that. And then, if you just do the lovely math on how many hit splats you've applied, yeah, that's right, you've applied 1,340 hit splats of barrage spell to target in 1.2 seconds, and you're in Legacy, so you can't auto-attack again for 2.4 seconds.
Now, let's
be clear.
Everything
is dead.
This is not right.
So you could stack things like Next Angel of Death minions that actually did have enough health for this to work, where you've got five things standing on top of each other, and just wipe them out in seconds.
Yeah.
There was a glitch with... The other glitch that was present with this was that Onslaught had an issue that nobody ever thought it was an issue, where it basically auto-crit. It just said the ability range, the damage range for this is so small that you're always kind of within 5% of the top, so it's just going to auto-crit all the time. It's also, like, there's a bunch of things that played into it being auto-crit in the back end, which meant that every Onslaught hit you fired off these autos. And the autos then fired off more autos.
Yeah.
And so you could Onslaught something, and if... Remember how Tsunami now only costs 40% adrenaline to use, and the special attack from this only costs 50%? That's less than 100, dog. Tsunami, every time you crit on something for the next 30 seconds, will give you 10% adrenaline. Oh. So if you're critting on something a bunch of times and you're Onslaughting, oh, hey, wait, my Onslaught can now suddenly go forever and not deal damage to me.
And yeah. There we have it. I want to read what Mod Raymond had to say about this this week after launch. He says, RS hotfix. We deployed a hotfix for the staff of Armadil's special attack to stop extra spellcasts from firing off from non-ability-based critical hits. Non-ability-based critical hits while we investigate and monitor the power level of the special attack. While working on this fix, we've also... I investigated and fixed an issue regarding the Onslaught ability and its tendency to crit with every hit. That's what you were just talking about. And while we appreciate your patience, while we assess where the special attack fits into the power level of the game, and we'll continue to make tweaks as required over the forthcoming weeks. It's worth following up on this, that this change doesn't necessarily reflect what the final result will be. We needed to react and get on top of this recursive crits to prevent any... further breakages, and we'll be revisiting how we can restore the effect back.
Yeah. So it's clearly not doing plus 25% damage right now, which is the problem. It's weak. With that said, they should, you know, be buffing it in some kind of way. It also does zip nada in legacy mode right now, because that's only auto attacks. It only applies on ability damage, which, oh, hey, Concentrated Blast is ability damage. It's all those things that do the same hit splats. All the hit splats that can apply books and everything else can now apply this. Poison's the only thing that applies on hit splats that aren't ability damage. And even those can't apply on bleeds, because bleeds don't count for anything. Yeah, we could theorize for days about the ways that they're going to change this.
I honestly don't think it's worth doing that. And, you know, based on where it came into game, it can only go up from this, because, you know, if you put this into game as your first tier 95 weapon and it was kind of a dud, that really wouldn't feel good. So I'd imagine it's going to wind up being more powerful than where it's at right now.
I mean, it just needs to be as good as an ECB, and that'll be fine.
Great.
All right. But we will definitely come back to this when it is fixed or they rework the special attack on that. Zant, do you have any thoughts on this weapon? As I feel like for you and me, I'm sitting here guiding this discussion. You're here as well. But this is still feels so far out of reach for you and me.
I'm still learning a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and you gotta wonder if people like us will actually ever need tier 95s.
So, oh, I definitely want it at some point.
Yeah. I also accept the fact that it's an elder artifact that has been broken.
Yeah.
And we put it back, like duct taped it back together. I guess it's fine.
All right. Well,
there's some lore issues there with thing maybe not actually having intrinsic power of its own without the stone, but it's fine.
It is what it is. We do have a couple questions, but before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for this episode. We're doing our roundtable this weekend on Saturday the 31st at 10 p.m. game time. If you guys are listening to that before that, but that date and time has been posted on the Patreon website. So this week, I would like to thank Amos Reed, a new arrival, Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., Kristen S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Blocks, Danny C., Diana, Drama Free, Dream Delayed, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Nora, Parnassius, Rastafa, Ren Hawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soup Finder, Stubby, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and of course, Zant, who is right here. Thank you so much.
Hi.
If you guys want to learn more about what this is about, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. But put short, we do have an entire back catalog of monthly bits. Those are a special bonus show that we do each and every month. Lots of fun topics. Last one was about mobile. Patreon supporters are currently voting on what the next one is going to be. And last time I looked, it was going to be about the RuneScape first-time user experience. So we'll be recording that one and releasing it in the second week of August because we are partially only here next week because of summer vacations and the like. But you get all that for as little as $1 a month. If you want to go up one more tier, we have a VIP tier for $3 a month where you get special rank on Discord and access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast. And for $5 a month, you'll receive exclusive access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of every year. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. And it's worth noting that should Tanis and I ever reach the mystical $500 a month tier, we will subject our taste buds to a whole range of spice, particularly painful as we undertake the Hot Ones challenge. David, Thaxi, or Zant, do you guys like spicy food, any of you?
Kinda.
Okay.
Not that much, but yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know if I like...
I would be crying.
Okay.
Same. But I do enjoy some spicy food every now and then.
You make a valid point. Yeah.
If you want to learn more about this, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. So we do have questions, and this sums up the end of the discussion of Care Pack really nicely. First one's from Ricky A. He says, I really like that with normal mode you can get all the drops, and I was wondering what are your thoughts are on this, that if on normal mode you get all the drops as you do, but you have a drastically lower chance of getting the tier 95 weapon. Is that fair? Should it stick just to hard mode? And he also says, I've really enjoyed this update, and it's made PVM accessible for a lot more people, and I really enjoy the voice acting and wish this could all go further. Okay, so should there be a tiny, tiny, minute chance to get the pieces of the staff in normal mode?
No.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I don't think it makes sense for a tier 95 weapon to be dropped from a boss where three people can basically AFK it with animate dead consistently.
Not even that as much as... You go for it.
Well, I was going to say, I can imagine a scenario where, I mean, the like ED3 bots have gotten pretty sophisticated. I imagine that people could figure out a way to bot Care Pack on normal mode with three people, and I don't think that you should be able to bot a tier 95 weapon.
All right. What do you think, Zant?
I don't know. I just think by the time someone is going to go for, you know, trying to get that weapon themselves, they're probably going to be doing hard mode anyways. So I don't really think it makes sense to be dropped from normal mode.
Yeah,
I strongly agree with that. I also think it's a question of scale. I have a strong opposition to drops being that level of RNG in this game. Things like the Corporeal Beast sigils that are 1 in 5,000, 1 in 6,000 from a boss, which is probably what you'd put this at, right? 1/10, if that, of the drop rate from hard mode, or you'll just get more of them that are normal mode than hard mode.
That's very so, like, true. That's the way math
it's
works.
It's not something that you can't grind for it. Like, you can't, at that point, it's not reasonable to try to grind for it. It's not reasonable. Like, if you get one, you're lucky. You're just adding a luck roll to the table. And I kind of hate that as a mechanic, that something can be that rare. It's just like, it's a reward for being rare. Like, there's, if an item is designated as, this is rewards being rare. Like, if you want to throw an LOTD chance, if you want to throw a rare drop table chance on this, go for it.
And it's also kind of like how back in the day, you'd have those very rare shots of getting the half shield to make the dragon square.
Yeah.
From a drop.
I mean, you're still
that
there.
Kind of thing.
We still roll those.
Yeah.
Once in a very great while.
And, you know, with that, Zant made I forget who made the point that if you're doing normal mode, you really don't need this level of power. And David, you and I have talked so much in the past that the game has power creep associated with it, and obviously at this point it's just going to go up when they fix the staff. You don't need that level of power. You don't need tier 95s for anything, really, do you? It'll make things easier, but you don't need them, right?
I don't think there's any content in the game you need better than tier 94. I mean, maybe 2559 claims, but not really.
That's high enriched Telos.
Yeah, I mean, I think even for those, you'd be fine in tier 90. It would be like
the RS guy is doing it on Iron Man with tier 85s and 90s. Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah,
I'm with you 100%.
Need it for anything.
Yeah, and then the whole discussion of the numbers and the small percentage difference comes in between them. And you know, I was initially thinking that at some point you could make it a very, very tiny drop on normal. But you guys raised two very good points, and I'm going to hover around the issue that a person doing normal doesn't need that kind of power. And if you're able to bot normal, you can just run that so many more times that you're going to bring more of these into the game. And you really don't want to have something like this that is effectively going to be farmed. I think
we are anti-bot, by the way.
Of course we are.
And I mean, they talked about a few weeks ago when they made it so they can monitor the programs that are running on your computer that impact RuneScape. They're really cracking down on them bot scripts. Regardless,
yeah, that's good.
So, privacy issues, but it's fine. That's not our problem.
And I think my only complaint about it is that it doesn't have some sort of skilling or archaeology component to it. I think that
I just want a skilling boss, Shane. I want it. Also, the eggs are going to hatch, and that's all I'm saying. The eggs are going to hatch.
All right, fair enough.
I'm still on this train. They can't not hatch. There's no way. There's no world that hatch. Okay.
All right. We'll get you back on for that episode where they hatch. the next one is from Chodo. Hello, my... Sorry, he's going to kill me for that. Hoods, my fellow nerds. This week we saw the release of the Note on Front, and oh my god. I'm the kind of the player that never cares about boss updates or PVM content in general, but today I just went to a careback session because why not? And it was amazing. It's the first noob-friendly boss in a long time. There's a lot of good lore attached to it as well, and I couldn't take him down solo, though I was really close, but duo was great. It combines abilities and your own skill as a player, and it drops sweet things. So my two questions are the following. If you haven't tried it yet, what's the main obstacle for you when it comes to putting your mind in PVM mode? And if so, what's different with this boss? And two, Karapak is Jazz's general. Do you think we'll get another Dragonkin too for the rest of the upcoming Elder God bosses? Who will they be? Thank you and have a great week and keep up this RuneScape shrine. So I want to approach this question because this is something everybody has said with this, is that Karapak is one of the most accessible bosses that has been released in a long time, and it's got me into it. Zant, you used to PVM a lot. What's your thoughts on why Karapak is doing what he's doing in terms of roping all these people into PVM?
Can you repeat that one more time? I'm sorry.
What's got you into Karapak? Because you used to PVM a lot, but you really haven't been in the recent years. So what about this boss has brought you back in?
I think that it's just a boss that's a lot more friendly for maybe lapsed players that are coming back to PVM simply because it is not that mechanic heavy. It's more focused around a couple more simple mechanics that allow you to kind of focus on your DPS. So it's just, it feels less daunting because of that, I think. Whereas something like Raksha, it's a little intense for someone who's just coming back.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I'll expand on what you said is that, and we talked about it earlier, that when you put the mechanics down on paper, there's three core mechanics, four if you count the enrage mode at the end. And when you start looking at it, that looks kind of like a quest boss, which is something that we've all done. And that makes it accessible to people like me in general. It allowed you to get back into it. And I'm going to now pivot this to David and Thaxi here because... Okay, go ahead.
One other nice thing I noticed with this, they actually included the list of the mechanics in the Beast tab, like right with the update.
Yeah.
First thing.
Yeah.
Like, good job. Thank you.
They said on the stream that they chose not to do that for, what was it? I don't know if it was Raksha. It was one of the bosses. They said they didn't do it because it was too complicated and thought it would scare people.
Oh. I mean, I think that's a situation where it's needed the most for people like me.
Yeah, but it's definitely made it accessible for this.
And it's kind of funny at the same time. There are certain bosses that still have coming soon as their guide. From
I want the third raid boss, and also, yeah, they need to get the mechanics out. I mean, yeah, there's some things that just like there's just too much.
Soon. It's been coming soon for 6 years.
Is that like AOD? I think it's one of those. Maybe. Anyways, doesn't. Yeah. Yes, there's a couple.
So the, for you guys. You guys on this. Obviously, normal mode is a walk, and the thing that I want to pivot this to with on you guys is that, have you guys taken a minute to consider that there's this boss on normal mode that people like myself and Zant and Chodo can kill, but yet it's still a challenge for you solo and groups on hard mode? Have you guys considered that at all? What has been accomplished with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's what so many people have desperately asked for a long time, which is just to release a normal mode and hard mode at the same time and have the hard mode be rewarding. Because I think the problem in the past is that hard mode has never really been rewarding. Like, for God Wars 2, challenge mode is sort of rewarding if you are only care about the pet and have multiple thresholds. Same with hard mode God Wars Dungeon 1. It's only rewarding if you have several thresholds and want the pet. Hard mode Virago is fun. I mean, hard mode Virago is easily my favorite boss in the game. But it's not rewarding. It's definitely less rewarding than normal mode is. And so this is the first time that hard mode has both been a huge step up. Like, I think even it's as good of a step up as normal to hard mode Virago was back in the day, but it's actually worth doing, which is
more.
Awesome.
I agree. I think that the difficulty range on this, they did a good job. Like, if like a person who is at my level of PVM gets a lot of challenge out of a trio hard mode, you know, a person at David's level will get a lot of challenge out of solos. They've given the highest echelon of PVMers and the next level of PVMers who really do nothing but PVM on this game things to do. And they've given people who want to do PVM but also skill and like be that all-round player, they've given them something to do. Like, I think that this boss isn't, it's not different. I think you could have used nearly the same inputs and do nearly the same thing every time. I think you could get very, like you could say, I think you could bot it. But, like, so it's not like it's changing every time, right? It's not like it's a Raksha or Virago where you've got different mechanics at different times. It's not, but it rewards, like, it challenges everybody, and everybody gets the challenge, and everybody gets rewarded for putting up with that challenge. You get the reward for the challenge that you accept for yourself. It's very much a choose your own adventure. And I'd be very happy to see additional bosses in this same kind of vein going forwards, although I still really want a skilling boss. Jam flex.
And I mean, with that, and we do have three other fronts that are going to be doing this, so we can hope that they're all going to be in the same vein of accessible at the low end, but also challenging at the high end as well. And I think that's the success story, that when you start peeling back everything we've seen this week, that's what needs to be talked about that nobody has talked about so far.
And that's awesome. Also, the end of Chodo's questions.
Yeah, I want to do that. So, Karapak is Jazz's general. Do we think it'll be other Dragonkin for the other upcoming fronts, or who will they be? I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not going to be more Dragonkin.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make a fun argument to make Dragonkin Wars Dungeon and just have Necros, Syrtes, Nodon.
Oh yeah,
and, oh,
you could definitely do that.
So, I mean, you could do it. I don't think it would be as engaging to have four Dragonkin bosses.
I think we got to get the easy one out of there and say that the full front will be Tzar.
And the eggs are still hatching. The Tsar are going to be the Slayer creatures. I have not given up hope.
Yeah, and there's going to be some kind of mutated Jazz kind of boss for the Tsar front. Now,
I've heard a lot of whisperings about an Wen.
Okay, that would make sense.
I don't know if that's real or if that's just people fan mailing, and I'm about it either way.
My silly idea for that is a possessed ice queen.
I don't know where that's coming from. Like, where in the lore it was like, okay, like the
that, that doesn't
winter?
Come from anywhere. I just kind of pulled it out of thin air. I thought it'd be funny.
Okay. Cool.
And if it happens, hey, it's on the record now.
I mean, they need bosses. It would be a real fun. Okay. Also,
that'd
and
be
I know
such a cool callback too.
We are saving lore. There is something that is itching. There's a single overhead line in the cathedral from Saren, where she says, "While the elders' followers maintain their onslaught, we stand here." I think there is a 0% chance that these eggs are not getting destroyed or hatching. I don't think Saren will be happy if they're destroyed.
I agree.
We could try to hide them, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're too much anima. There's too much problem. There's nowhere to put them. Unless we, like, they did say that nobody's guessed where the story's going. I haven't seen people say they're hatching it, but, that we could potentially shove them off into the abyss. I don't think that really fixes things. I think
that'd
causes them. They did actually. They said, yeah, that's not a thing because they would come back with abyssal powers and we just have more problems. So, I think they're hatching, and I think we're going to be doing something to contain them. And I hope that that is our skilling boss. Is that our skilling boss is draining these or cooling these or, you know, something a la Temperos, a la, you know. Wintertot from old school. Like that's, I think that would be a great way to like.
So
we're
do
going
you think
that
would be the big front?
There. I don't really know.
See,
that's
the only one I don't know what it would be about.
Well, which is the last one? Because I kind of think they won't do anything with the eggs until the end.
Yeah, what's the order of them? Because it's on the logo, I think.
It's going to be Jazz, Wen, Bic, Full.
Full. So, also, we don't know where the hammer is, and the hammer is a building tool, so maybe it's just hidden in the Sarkelm. This is me fan theorying so hard. I don't want the hammer to just appear and suddenly we have a tier 95 crush weapon, although we do need one. We need some crush weapon, but, like, I don't want it to just be like, oh, hey, here it is. Also, it's yours now. Ha ha. Bad. No, don't do it. Bad Jajax. But, again, fan theorying. I am torn between the eggs will hatch and we will get like additional Slayer mobs with these that are like Glacors and Tzar as our Slayer monsters. Or if the eggs will be off somewhere, maybe the eggs are going to be the equivalent of Telos. Like that would make sense, right? If they were the big baddie.
Yeah. Bic's alignment is alienation and Earth, or sorry, alteration and Earth.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely Earth. Like, that's definitely she is the creator of the green thing.
Full constancy and fire.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And, of course, for when you got inversion and ice.
Yeah.
So.
And I think they could have some fun mechanics with a lot of these.
I feel like the next three are the ones I'm most excited to see what they're about. I don't know.
Once again, I really want a skilling boss, Jamflex. give me a skilling boss, give me something that is not a traditional boss encounter where I'm like running, not even like Rex. I want to be like running between phases. I want like platforms disappearing. Like, give me something new.
Yeah, and they did say it would be non-conventional, and Carapac felt fit pretty conventional going in, so you gotta
very
wonder where it's
did.
Gonna
this
go.
Is very much, it's go this is very future. Much you took a God Wars dungeon boss and you put him onto hard mode.
Yeah.
And then you gave him a hard mode.
Alright.
So one thing I'm really wondering about with this, and we don't really have any way to like know yet, but how's the rest of this dungeon gonna be laid out? Like, where are these next fronts gonna take place? Like,
there's
I can't imagine
there's 4 doors out of the cathedral.
Right, but so far there's no more areas on the map around that, so I guess they're either going to add more
there
later,
was,
or
they just have to build it, right?
Yeah.
There was. This,
I would imagine that all 4 bosses would be in that Colosseum. I feel like that would.
No, there's a. If you looked at the map before this week's update, there was a section off to the south.
Yes,
take a look at the map.
That was,
it wasn't animated. It was just a skin over the top of everything. But you could free cam down into it,
and you could see ice. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, off in the corner.
So
they're putting something there.
Yeah, it will be in parts of Sentistic.
Well, I just learned that I need to actually look around.
All right. With that being said, if you guys want to send your own questions in, you can send them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb. We also do have a form where you can send your questions at update.rsbnb.com/ask. We're going to move on into the patch notes here as we wrap this show up. There really wasn't that much in the patch notes this week to talk about, but we will go through them nonetheless. Starting off with mobile fixes, improved spacing between icons on the top left of the mobile UI. The double XP banner will no longer over the ports UI. Fixed an issue where ability icons were cut off at the bottom of the screen in the abilities tab. That's a big one. And the plus keys button on the store no longer redirects to the main menu. It will now open the purchase key screen as expected. Also, some changes have been made to the default ribbon for desktop players to be more helpful for new players. On the top, you'll have activity tracker, backpack, worn equipment, skills, magic book, prayer, familiars, and drops. And on the bottom row, you'll have heroes, customizations, adventures, powers, socials, upgrades and extras, rune metrics, and settings. This kind of sounds like the mobile UI, doesn't it? Just with a little bit more on it. I think it's good to have that level of consistency. So I'm pleased with that. Slayer task streaks can now increase beyond 16,000. That's not me, but okay, if those people out there exist.
I think amazing. I saw a Reddit post where somebody was really hyped about this.
Of all the bugs to fix, cool.
An air quote bug.
And the correct amount of Slayer points with this will now be awarded upon task completion. And tool tips for bank preset buttons now appear as expected. And the towel outfit will no longer recolor to your choice of default outfit colors. Using the wardrobe interface will also allow you to recolor it as you would with other outfits. So not too much in the patch notes there. There's that one person out there.
I no longer have a jeans-colored towel. It's a win.
There you go. There's that one person out there with that 16,000 Slayer task streak that's happy. And new users benefit a little bit more from the way the UI is laid out. So there we have it. All right. So let's wrap this one up. I'm going to do a pick of the week this week, and this is a tool that I've been using for a while now. It's called Espanso. It's basically a text expander that works on whichever operating system you're on. It doesn't connect to the internet, so you don't need to worry about it sending your text that you're trying to expand out over the internet and pull it in from some server out there. And it's fully customizable as well. So what I use this for is when I'm publishing the podcast, all I have to do is type :// and then update, and then it will automatically give me a little form field. I'll enter the episode number, the duration, and people who are on it, and it'll type out the entire update, RSBNB update post for me. And that's why this is pick of the week, because previously, for all the other episodes out there, I would copy and paste the text from last week's episode, change a few numbers, insert a few things, and people have, of course, noted that that's very prone to typos. So as a result, this all centralizes it and just makes it a lot easier to make sure that there's no mistakes in those posts. If you send form emails out a lot, this could be good for you. It's got integration so that if you want the current date, it will just give you a formatted date however you'd like it. If you have favorite emojis that you want to be using anywhere, you can map it so that it'll replace text with an emoji. Even if you're doing HTML code or something like that, you could use this. But this is 100% cross-platform and 100% open source and free, and it doesn't contact any internet servers. So that's another huge benefit of it, is that your text isn't stored on some server somewhere. So that's the pick of the week, Espanso. You can find it at espanso.org. Any of you guys think this would be useful to you, or is this another niche Shane tool?
Bad student. Me no use computer. Beep boop.
What was that?
I am the least tech savvy. Medical students in general, from my experience, are in zero ways tech savvy. It's terrifying how, being in a hospital, none of us know how to work anything. So I have no use for this, I'm sorry to say.
All right, how about you, Zan?
I wouldn't begin to know how to use this.
Not too sure. I mean, maybe with something.
All right, and I'm guessing David's in that same category as well, that given that you have to say anything.
Yeah, I have no idea.
All right. But all platforms, espanso.org. Let's start with some achievements then.
All right, so on the 28th, we have EL8 with 99 Archaeology, Luke XF with 99 Firemaking, Mahin with 99 Attack, and Pratis with 120 Invention.
Nicely done.
We have Queen RuPaul with 99 Farming on July 28th. Mandy with 99 Dungeoneering on July 27th. Thaxi, 120 Defense, good job, on July
27th.
Thank you! Yay! Ubit Anubi with 99 Invention on July 25th.
On the 24th of July, we have Badger getting 120 Archaeology. We have Captain Metaphor with 120 Farming and earning his Completionist capes. Big ups and grats to him. We have Thelion with 200 million prayer, or the Lion, there we go, with 200 million prayer XP, and Zodiac Hide with 120 magic.
Oh, that's how you say that, Zodiac Hide. Interesting. I never thought of saying it that way. But continuing on, we have Cadnap with 99 Slayer on the 23rd, Gooey Cookie with 99 Fishing on the 23rd, and Shiro Shana with 120 Ranged on July 22nd. Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done.
I would like to say that I earned that 120 defense unintentionally, without realizing I was approaching it, off of a jellyfish at the Yakamaru boss. And I feel like that is very appropriate for me.
Very much so. Very much so. All right. What have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Zant.
So, in an attempt to get me playing RS a little bit more regularly, I've started doing some dailies again. Most notably, I've just been doing a lot of herb runs. So literally, like, every day I do three or four. And
yes,
it's making me some good money with the price of dwarf weeds right now. But other than that, prior to Care Pack coming out, I started soloing Nex again. So relearning that was really fun. It was actually a lot easier than I expected nowadays. So yeah, I'm doing some kills with that every evening.
Definitely compared to Legacy, man.
Yeah, dude, that was intense. I actually remember there was a point where I tried coming back to do it like during EOC, and I just struggled with it so much. But this had to be like 2015 or something like that. But yeah, power creep.
Off. Power creep.
All right, how about you, David?
Well, I spent the last several days, because I liked Carapax so much on my main, I really wanted to start doing it on my Iron Man. So I spent the last several days just doing nothing but Raksha until getting Grico, which I finally got. So I can now take my Iron Man to Carapax, but I do need another Ascension crossbow. And I have a Barrow's die ready for it, so that part's good. I need another crossbow.
Oh, no. Getting ascensions on an Iron Man.
You
got to
do it in style, don't you?
Well, I got to get a third for switching. But yeah, so...
Do game, you?
Just been
so
at,
many
just
keystones. At, David, so many keystones.
At, yeah, but eventually I want Golden Reaper on it anyway, so it's fine. But yeah, so I've done... a lot of, I could tell you how many caps I've killed the last 2 days. Last 2 days I've killed, not as many as I thought. I've killed 17,000 caps the last 3 days or so.
Wow.
So I've been living at those things for a while.
All right.
What's the caps?
Capsarius is like the way you get the way you get the keystones.
Not to be confused with our new man K-Pak or K-Pak.
Oh no!
If
yeah,
you want
no.
to,
I was
make
like,
it
dang,
like a,
is Casey that high already?
No, I don't know. I have 17,000.
I was wondering if that was going to come up. K-Pak versus K-Pop in this boss.
No, it's like Tupac. It's like Tupac. It's not Tupac. He doesn't have a Tupac.
He's
it's
the one
abs.
Who people thought faked his death, right?
His name is it's K-Pak. This boss's name is K-Pak, and that's how it's staying.
All right. So what have you been up to at RS aside from this, if anything, Taxi?
I've been... I got 120 defense without realizing it at Yakamaru on my just daily Monday raid, which was a blast, I guess.
Is this podcast the first time you knew about it?
No. I mean, I didn't realize it was coming, and then I got it. Like, everybody in my raid was like, grats? Everybody in the client was like, grats? I'm like, oh... neat. So that was cool. But no, this week has been entirely... So I spent a lot of time digging through the lore and reading through all of the dialogue and trying out all of the battlefield abilities. I've tried the Nodon on both ranged magic and melee. For the record, I actually like them on magic best, but that's beside the point.
Me too.
I got myself one of the drops from them. It's my only unique that I've actually gotten so far, other than a ton of pages. I've done, like I say, 20 hard mode and about 40 normal mode Carapax. So I'm doing a couple of very relaxed Carapax hours a night and a couple hours of very relaxed Nodon a night. Honestly thinking about like the lore and the changes and the dialogue from this has so much hidden in it in the way that the gods are interacting with each other. And like without Bandos and Gothics being like Armadil has this like lovely neutral place. And I'll put a question in for the podcast next week about it. Cause I got a lot of thoughts about the way this is going and how the generals are interacting with each other and talking with the, being able to talk to the Praezal next to Praezal is super neat. That's new. First time that's been a thing and they've got interesting personalities. And one of them is apparently their siblings and one of them's a sister. Anyways, super neat. Big ups about that. That's been my week, is just really diving into this update and really enjoying all the content from it.
All right, sounds good. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't point that out, that, you know, this week was largely focused on Carapak, but next week we will be doing the once-over of everything else in the dungeon, the Slayer creatures and what they drop and what all of their lore looks like and all the other fun little nuggets of information that we can pull out of that. But for me this week, I got 117 Dungeoneering from the beach.
Which, Master Questkeeper requirement, let's go!
I know, that was sitting in the back of my mind, but I got to think on that a little bit more.
It's a big commitment.
It really is. But aside
from... still actually train Dungeoneering, SMH.
How is it compared to comp? Because I found comp like pretty fun, and I'm doing scrim requirements.
Master Quest is more than comp. I feel.
Really? You think so?
I don't. I don't. Master Quest Cape is more RNG grind. There's a lot of things that are, if you're lucky, you're great. If you're not lucky, you're in trouble. It's not as bad as like Trim necessarily, but it's definitely the RNG cape as much as it is the lore cape.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd agree with that.
Also, fun fact, just quick, because it's important for people to know this, the lore hound does increase your chance for the lore book from the new bosses. So me crying over here without my Master Quest Cape back, the Lorehound is my best friend right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, that's good. I've seen lots of lore hounds out there. But, you know, I actually like Carapac, so I will be going back there. We will be doing the round table this weekend. We'll be doing more Carapac there and maybe some other boss like we did last Free Death weekend. I don't know. I might talk to you guys about that and see which one we might surprise everybody with, but I'm not going to say
what
that's...
Let's see Shane tackle some next, see how that goes.
But I'm not going to say what that'll be. So
video bit? What?
Yeah, of course there'll be video.
Or video nibble?
Yeah, of course. And I think that's about it. I don't have anything else I've been up to, and this show is complete this week. So thank you, everybody, for being here. We hope Tanis gets better, of course. You guys can subscribe at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Casts, Spotify, and, of course, YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. But this episode wouldn't have been possible without David, Thaxi, and Zant. Thank you, the three of you, for being here, providing your insight and expertise on everything Carapac related. It was much appreciated.
Thanks, Shane.
And
good luck on staff pieces if you're going back to.
And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.